Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
It's 9:30. Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
And for today's chat, we have David Mestre, who's the director of the Planetarium at the Discovery Museum. David, thanks for being with us this morning.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, so David, I'm going to be honest with you. Tony and I know little to nothing about space. I'm being honest.
And well, Discovery is known as a place for space, so we'll try to answer all your questions. Yeah.
Thank God, because both of us immediately, when we saw this report yesterday, immediately thought, let's call the Discovery Museum, because that's where we go for our space needs and everything else. So talk to us, first of all, break this down in the most layman terms you can. What is going on with Jupiter?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Well, Jupiter is going to be going through what's called opposition. So once a year, Jupiter, the Earth, and the Sun line up in a nice straight line, Earth in between of the Sun and Jupiter. And what it looks like in the sky is that as the Sun is setting in the northwest this June, the planet Jupiter is going to be rising in the southeast at around the same time, roughly. And so for the entire night, Jupiter is going to be gracing the skies. And so about midnight, you should be able to look almost due south. And at that time, you'll see a piercing point of light, and that is actually going to be the planet Jupiter. And you don't need a telescope to see it, but if you actually have a pair of binoculars, you might actually catch a couple of little points of light next to the main point of light. And those are actually Jupiter's moons.
That was going to be my next question. I mean, you could actually see this in your backyard.
Yes, you can actually do stargazing in your backyard. And for some of these bright objects, like the planet Jupiter, they will be definitely prominent and visible in the skies, here in the area that we live in.
How often does this happen? Is this something that happens once every 100 years?
It's not something that's rare. Opposition is basically a dance that occurs between these three bodies, the Sun, the Earth, and the planet Jupiter. And because our Earth swings around in its orbit, it'll come back around next year, in about a year, to catch up to the planet Jupiter, and as we pass it, we'll have this moment that we call opposition. So it's not terribly rare. It just happens every year or so. Just a little bit over a year, because Jupiter is moving too. So we have to kind of spend a little more time trying to catch up to it.
And we have David Mestre, who is the director of the Planetarium at the Discovery Museum. And he's talking to us about how Jupiter right now is kind of lining up a little bit where we could actually see it. And I think that that's incredible. Even if you're not into astronomy, what would you tell someone, to maybe take the time to go outside and go check this out? I keep thinking of even Tony and I, we have to get up around 2:30, 3 o'clock to just get to work every morning. And I'm thinking maybe I should get up a couple minutes early just to go stand outside for a few minutes before I get in the car and go to work.
I think sometimes we've lost our connection to space and the stars. So it's always good to kind of, spend that quiet time and just kind of looking up. The other thing is that, things are happening in the sky. And, around June 14th to the 19th, you're going to watch the moon pass by Jupiter and pass by Saturn, because it turns out that in the evening sky, both Jupiter and Saturn will be visible in the southern skies. So it's something to see. And like I said, you don't need a telescope, but if you did have a small telescope, you would be able to see Jupiter's moons and Saturn's rings.
Tony, are you any good at spotting stuff? Because here's the thing. Yeah. I get made fun of all the time when anybody's like, do you see the Little Dipper? And I think, yup, no. I'm not good at spotting stuff.
I'm not any good at Where's Waldo. Never mind space.
Well, there's a little bit of a what happens is that, the stars and the planets kind of look the same from a distance because they just look like points of light. But you can tell the difference because a planet in the sky doesn't twinkle like a star does.
Ah.
So if it's not twinkling, you're probably looking at a planet.
That's cool.
And the planets they tend to be a little bit brighter than the stars that are around them. Jupiter's going to be fairly bright. And so it will stand out. And if you look at it very carefully, it doesn't twinkle. It's fairly bright. And if you were to watch it for a long period of time, you would notice that it's not stuck in the sky. It's actually moving among the stars. And that's where the name planet comes from. It used to be called a wandering star because it never was fixed in the sky.
Dave, is there any other thing that's going to happen soon that we should know about, any kind of phenomenon that you could tell us about?
Well, I think the big thing that's going to be happening fairly soon next month is that we're going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. And that's going to be something pretty amazing, remembering that moment in history when humanity set foot on the surface of another world.
It's huge. I don't know if you saw that special on TV, 1969. They were taking different events, and they spent like an hour on the men walking on the moon.
Yeah.
And what I found fascinating was Ted Kennedy and that whole Chappaquiddick thing was actually happening simultaneously with the men walking on the moon.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Wow, that's amazing. I know that around the same time, there were two movies that were actually shown, 2001 A Space Odyssey,
mm-hmm.
and Planet of the Apes was actually around that time, too.
Yeah,
that's right. Two different versions of what the future could look like. And so, I think there were lots of questions that were being asked about, where is humanity going and what is our destiny among the stars. But we'll be celebrating that here at the Discovery Museum. We've got July 18th, we've got an event. It's called our launch party, and we're going to have Two Roads and Fortuna's sponsoring that. And then on July 20th, the actual celebration day, we're inviting everybody to come down to the museum, and we're having a special commemoration of the Apollo 11 moon landing.
And if people want more information about the Discovery Museum, where can they go?
They can go to our website, www.discoverymuseum.org.
All right. Today is National Donut Day. So if you are a fan of donuts, and who isn't a fan of donuts, these are your days. We have a few donut deals that you can take advantage of today. If you buy any drink at Dunkin' Donuts, you get a donut for free. You can get a free donut at Krispy Kreme just by walking into the door. No purchase necessary. Walmart is giving away over 1 million free glazed donuts today. Just head to the bakery section of any Walmart, and they'll take care of you. Also, Entenmann's is running a contest through their website where you can suggest a new donut flavor. And if they pick yours, you might win $5,000 plus free donuts for a year. Cumberland Farms is giving away free donuts if you buy a cup of coffee or any fountain drink. But that's only happening until around 10 o'clock this morning. And Hardee's, do we have Hardee's around here? I haven't seen one.
I don't think so.
No, I don't. No. Well, just in case, if there happens to be one, Hardee's is giving out free Fruit Loops mini donuts. That sounds good.
That sounds so good.
All weekend long with any purchase, but you need a coupon. And, of course, the Salvation Army, who made donuts very, very popular in World War I, is holding free donut events all over the country. So just be looking around for that. But, yes, donuts are one of the reasons why I'm under a doctor's care this very, very day. Tony Reno can eat a mess of donuts, but you're going to laugh at me. I like all kinds of donuts.
I mean,
there's no such thing as a bad donut. My favorite donut is just the plain kind at Dunkin' Donuts.
Why would I laugh at you?
It's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. There's a reason why plain is a thing, and it hasn't gone away, because a lot of people like plain. It's the same with ice cream. A lot of people love just plain vanilla ice cream.
Sure.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Sure, absolutely.
If you love donuts that much, Tony, you know what? We tried this summer, and it was unbelievable. Have you gone to Maine? Or no, does Tony Reno not leave the state of Connecticut?
No, I was in Maine one time many years ago. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone to that? Gosh, I should text my husband and find out. I'll bring it back up later in the show because he's not awake yet. But there's a place that is known in Maine for, they're like deep fried donuts.
Mm-hmm.
They're like gourmet, unbelievable donuts. And we tried them earlier this spring, I guess. They're unbelievable. Like, I didn't eat anything for 2 days. They were that good. It was unreal.
Yeah.
And they're these unbelievably eclectic, I don't know, they're crazy, flavors.
It's funny you should say crazy. We've got a crazy donut around here. It's a place called Crazy Donuts.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And we ended up with a dozen of them one day here in the kitchen. And I got to tell you, those donuts were so good. They were so big. You're absolutely right. I couldn't finish it. And you know me. I mean,
I know, we'll take down a couple donuts,
I could do it. But one donut was, I was pushing it, you know?
Crazy Donuts, is that the one that has, if you, you know, like the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup donut with like actual stuff on top of them and things like that? They're wild, but they look amazing. People Instagram those photos all the time, and I think, wow, I just want to look at it. It's so pretty. I don't know if I'd want to eat it.
They look good, and they taste good. Let's go into the classroom now, and let's learn a little bit about the history of the donut. Here we go.
Donuts. It's just not breakfast without one. So who do we thank for inventing the tasty treat? Well, donut-like foods have been around in one form or another for centuries across a variety of cultures. The Dutch have long been credited for creating the donut that we're mostly familiar with, although the earliest known recipe for donuts actually dates back to an English cookbook from 1800. During this period, donuts were typically one solid piece of dough with a raw center, often filled with other foods like fruits and nuts. But for the modern ring-shaped donut, we can thank Hansen Gregory, who invented the treat in 1847 when he was only 16 years old. According to Gregory, he was sick of the raw dough at the center of that era's donuts, so he put a hole in the middle for more even cooking. Donuts would remain a novelty until World War I, when their popularity exploded, making the donut a staple of the American breakfast. Thanks for watching, everyone. Please like and subscribe to this channel for more videos.
All right, we certainly will. There you go. Some useless information here this morning on WACC 600. But that was fun. Yeah, I didn't know all of that about the donut.
I'm saluting Hansen Gregory this morning. Who knew that he was so unbelievable and would make us enjoy donuts so many decades later. We appreciate you.
Hansen, wherever you are, thank you so much. With us here on the telephone line is Officer Kevin Wells and Lieutenant Robert Dedato, and they are co-coordinators for the Run to Honor Special Olympics. Guys, how you doing this morning? Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing okay. We understand. All right. Good morning. We understand you guys are about to get to Greenwich, where this event starts. Now, tell us what the Torch Run entails. And it seems like a lot of moving parts. No pun intended, I mean, but it seems like you guys are on the run.
Yeah, we very much are on the run. We're on our way to Greenwich now. The Torch Run is a three-day run. The Torch of Flame of Hope, is carried around the state for 3 days. Today's the final day. Officers from towns all over the state and state police and college officers carry it from town to town. It culminates at Southern Connecticut State University tonight for the opening games, where the officers will be there to cheer on the Special Olympics athletes as they get started.
And we understand that you guys have been working on this. I've got to imagine with so many towns and cities, of course, the reason that we're highlighting it today is because it's right here in our listening area. Again, you guys are starting in Greenwich. You're going to end up in New Haven by the end of this evening. So tell us, I have to imagine when you have so many towns and cities involved in something like this, it takes a whole lot of prep. So when did you guys start planning this? How did you get the route together, the runners, all of that?
So the routes are checked every year by us coordinators. Kevin and I, for example, are Leg 10 coordinators from Greenwich to New Haven. And to be quite honest with you, we start planning the Torch Run about a month after it ends. And we're working on it all year. What we like people to know is that the law enforcement Torch Run is not just about a three-day run. It's also about all the events we do throughout the year to support our athletes of Special Olympics. We do cop on tops, tip of cops, jail and bails, all kinds of events. Last year, the law enforcement nationwide raised $56 million for the athletes of Special Olympics worldwide.
And it is police officers all running this event, right? I mean, they're the ones who are running, I guess, the torch is what I mean to say.
Yes, it's all officers running the torch. There will be some athletes joining us today in certain sections, and they'll run with the officers. But this is a great day of awareness for the support that law enforcement gives our athletes of Special Olympics. A lot of people aren't aware of the relationship between our local law enforcement and our athletes. And as much as the athletes love to have us there cheering them on, I think we get much more out of being with them.
All right, Officer Kevin Wells and Lieutenant Rob Dedato are here, co-coordinators for the Run to Honor Special Olympics. Now, this is not the first time that we've seen the Torch Run in Connecticut. Why does the state do this every year?
We do this every year because there's such a large contingency of officers who believe in the movement. We choose to include, we choose to get the awareness out there that our athletes deserve the same opportunities as everyone else that they get. And if we're not out there spreading the word for them, we're afraid that people wouldn't hear what these athletes have to say and what they want to do.
And I have to imagine seeing, I would say, this flood of runners from town to town, city to city, has to be quite the spectacle. So if people want to catch a piece of the action, what can we tell them? Where can they go if they want to see the runners in their town, cheer them on? We know runners in Fairfield, because you guys are out of Fairfield, they're going to be here around lunchtime today. But can people see it from outside their office buildings? Can they cheer people on? What can we tell them?
We certainly encourage anybody to come out and definitely cheer these runners and athletes on as we come through town. Like we said, we're going to be starting. We will be leaving Greenwich exactly at 8 o'clock, and we work our way through every town all the way up through Fairfield. We actually hit the Westport-Fairfield town line at exactly 12 noon, and then we work our way to Sherman Green. At Sherman Green, we have a short lunch at 12:20. And then we leave Sherman Green at about 12:45, and we continue on through Bridgeport, Stratford, and all the way to New Haven. We get to New Haven at 5:15. So the runners do it about 11-minute pace. So eventually, you know, like I said, we get to...
You eventually get into New Haven, it sounds like. We have Officer Kevin Wells and Lieutenant Rob DeDato, who are the co-coordinators for the Torch Run. It's starting at 8 o'clock in Greenwich. We thank you guys so much for being on the air with us explaining this, and a long day ahead of you guys. We are very proud of the officers in our listening area. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. You're doing some great, great work. Get out there and continue it. And thank you so much for your service.
Thank you very much. We'll see you all on Route 1 today, the post road from Greenwich to New Haven. Come on out and cheer us on.
All right. How will we know you guys?
We'll be the two loud guys in the back of the truck on the PA.
All right. Thanks a lot. With us here on the telephone line, Congressman Jim Himes. We always get an opportunity to speak with him on a Friday morning at this time. Congressman, how are you today?
Hey, Tony, doing well. Beautiful weather.
Yes, absolutely. And we're so happy to have you here this morning. Only a few minutes, so let's get right to it. We understand Governor Lamont wants to go into a special session over tolls. Now, the biggest push for this is to get money for Connecticut's infrastructure. Can you give us a little insight on the state's infrastructure and why we should take on tolls?
Well, two things to say right up front. I was with a couple of state legislators yesterday, and they told me that this special session is not likely to take up tolls. They've got a lot of, you know, cleanup work to do because, and again, remember, I'm in D.C., not in Hartford, so I wasn't there. But, you know, they finished up literally at midnight on the dot two nights ago, and so they've got a lot of implementing work to do. But my understanding, talking to a couple state senators, was that tolls is not on the schedule for this special session. But, I mean, you know, the story here, Tony, and obviously, you know, the state's had a debate about this ever since it came up several months ago. And, you know, I try to stay out of the lane of our state legislators. But, you know, we have a desperate need for improved infrastructure, bridges, roadways. You know, if you spend any time in our train stations, you know that there is a desperate need for investment in that infrastructure, which, by the way, is something that is a huge focus of mine in Washington. And the problem politically here, Tony, is that, you know, I spend a lot of time around elected officials. It's awfully easy to go back to your people and say what I just said. We really got to invest. We really got to make improvements in our infrastructure. And then the question comes, how do you pay for it? And, of course, nobody likes any of the ways you pay for it, because at least at the federal level, much of our infrastructure is paid for through a gas tax, 18 cents a gallon on our gas. People don't like that. You know, some people don't like tolls. So anyway, my position has always been, hey, if you don't want tolls, that's fine. But then you got to propose a different way of paying for the investment we need to make in our infrastructure. And that way can't be borrowing. Borrowing, of course, is not paying for something. It's just making sure that somebody down the road pays for it.
So at some point, we need that money for the infrastructure. We have Congressman Jim Himes on the line with us. And recently, Congressman, you posted to your Facebook page about R4 Technologies in Connecticut. So that sounds like this company is one of the leading companies bringing high-tech jobs to Connecticut. Tell me if I'm wrong. But can you talk to us a little bit about that? What's the need for this industry in providing jobs, especially here in Connecticut?
Yeah, whenever I'm in Connecticut, Melissa, I make an effort to get around to to the companies in the district, the employers in the district, because, you know, Connecticut as a whole, we're doing pretty well in Fairfield County here, but Connecticut as a whole is not growing at the speed that we want it to grow economically. So I spend a lot of time with companies large and small, and some non-companies too, by the way. I was at Paws in Norwalk yesterday, which is an animal shelter, just to kind of learn how they operate, you know, what's working for them and what's not working for them. And, of course, visiting R4 and other companies like that is largely about learning what their challenges are. And of course, if you're in Fairfield County, Connecticut, one of your challenges that is hard to deal with is the fact that, you know, costs are high, right? Electricity is expensive. Wages are high, you know, which is a good thing for people making those wages. You know, the other issue, just to come back to what I was just talking about with Tony, without exception, people tell me that one of the hardest things about doing business in Fairfield County is the traffic. You know, an employee who lives all of 10 miles away can sometimes take 45 minutes to get to work. And so, anyway, that's the point of those visits, Melissa, to really kind of understand what the challenges are and what elected officials at every level, including my level in Washington, can do to try to help.
Taking a moment here to speak with Congressman Jim Himes. We do it every Friday. Speaking of jobs, Congressman, your office is offering Small Business Network workshops this month. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've done this. This is our second and third workshops we're doing. And the reason we do it is that if for small businesses out there, there's actually a lot of resources that people sometimes don't know about. Let me name two of them, Tony, that are particularly important. The Small Business Administration, the SBA, does lending to small businesses. They do it through banks, but if you're a small business, you can often, if you can't qualify commercially, you know, that is just walking into a bank and getting a loan, quite often you can get an SBA guaranteed loan. What happens is the SBA guarantees those loans, and therefore banks are much more willing to make those loans. You know, and they can be hundreds of thousands, even in some cases up to millions of dollars. You know, we want to make sure people know that those are out there, because oftentimes raising money is one of the big challenges for our small business. The other thing I would mention, Tony, there's an outfit out there that an awful lot of people should know about called SCORE. It is a big group of retired business executives, sometimes people who held very senior positions at very, you know, Fortune 500 companies, who in their retirement are actually mentoring and working with businesses large and small for free. And so it's those kinds of resources, Tony, that we're trying to make, you know, we're just trying to raise awareness of them being out there so that our business people, our small businesses and others can know what's out there to help them.
Congressman Jim Himes, we have run out of time, and I had two more questions for you. Dang it, but that's okay. We will hold them for next week.
Next Friday.
We really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
All right,
thanks
so much, guys.
Okay, all right. Let's take a look at some things that happened on this date in history. 250 years ago, 1769, Daniel Boone started exploring Kentucky. All right, that was 250 years ago. Wow. 90 years ago, 1929, Vatican City became its own independent country. I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either. I thought you were going to say I didn't realize it was its own independent country. Have you ever been to the Vatican?
Oh, no.
It's very neat. It's completely fenced in, Tony, because I've been there once or twice before, but it's completely fenced in. You have to actually, like, you know, bring your passport to get in and everything. It's very cool. Like, you're within the area, and then you go up. You've got to go and give your passport to enter this. It seems like very small area, but yes, it's its own entity.
Did you see the Pope?
Oh, I wish I saw the Pope. I have friends who got married, who they actually, for their honeymoon, they went and they met the Pope. They went on a day where he comes out to the... But no, when we went, gosh, I went in high school a long time ago. I went with Norwalk High School, the Italian teacher there. She brought her class, and her son and I were very good friends, so they brought me along. It was a cool experience. But I believe the Pope was supposed to come out and speak, like, to everybody in the courtyard, but he didn't end up coming out that day. I don't remember what happened, but no, I've never seen the Pope. I apologize for that.
All right, well, don't apologize.
Well, no, I wish I had. That'd be cool.
All right, 44 years ago today, 1975, Sony introduced their Betamax video cassette recorder to the public. It cost $995. Betamax ended up losing the home video war to VHS, and of course, none of this matters in the slightest anymore, because who the heck has a VHS recorder anyway? Here's something interesting. interesting. 37 years ago in 1982, Priscilla Presley opened up Graceland to the public 5 years after Elvis's death. And the reasoning behind that was Elvis wasn't as wealthy at the time of his death as you think that he would be. Apparently, from what I've read, he had Graceland and he had $3 million in his checking account. Okay,
really?
Now $3 million for you and I, that's nothing to sneeze at. But for the king to only have $3 million at the time of his death, yeah, mm-hmm. that's all that he had. And she needed to raise some money. And she opened up Graceland. She turned it into a big museum. And to this very day, it's a sorry thing to say, but Elvis is worth more dead than he was alive.
Isn't that always the case, though?
Yeah, that really is.
Because didn't we see that with Michael Jackson and his estate? I believe that we saw that as well. And it's crazy to see, Tony, that there are more, I feel like more singles coming out that have Michael Jackson featuring. There's one with Justin Timberlake. There's one mm-hmm. with Akon. There's all these different artists who have Michael Jackson included in their songs. And I think, my gosh, he's been gone. How are you doing this? It's amazing.
It really is. Elvis loved Graceland, and Priscilla, of course, was his hunk of burning love.
Donuts. It's just not breakfast without one. So who do we thank for...
All right, we hit the wrong button there, but that's... Oh, here it is, over here. Oh, that's not it either. Where the heck did I do with it? Here it is. WACC with Melissa Sheketoff in the morning.